Welcome to the Red Sox On Deck Prospect Podcast. This is episode 16, and I am decidedly not Bob Osgood. But I am Jake Devereaux. I'm a voice that you heard if you started listening to this podcast from the jump. I am filling in for Bob today. But the good news is that you might not have Bob, but you definitely have Shelley Verstraete. So Shelley, welcome to your podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad to be at here on the podcast that I frequent weekly.
Yes, we are glad to have you as well. So a little bit of housekeeping before we get started. If you enjoy what we're doing over here on this podcast or on any of the other podcasts on the network, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on whichever platform you use to listen. And all you have to do is subscribe there and you'll get all of our podcasts. The Over the Monster podcast with Matt and Brian, The Red Seat with me, Jake Devereaux, and Keaton DeRocher, and the Precap pod with Shelley and Keaton, as well as this lovely pod. We're going to be going over some news and notes today and getting to some updates from a few of the different levels, as well as a little bit of draft discussion. So, Shelley, we've got a full podcast here. Let's get right into it. The first little bit of news is Connor Wong was called up to the major leagues as Kevin Plawecki was placed on the IL with an injured left hamstring. Shelley, were you surprised that Connor Wong got the call instead of either of the two sort of disposable veteran catchers who were on the AAA roster?
I actually was. I just expected them, to have like a guy who has played in the major leagues before, just kind of, just backing up Vasquez. But I guess they didn't want to make that 40-man roster decision there. That's the only thing that I can think that is the reason why, which I guess I get because they do have some upcoming 40-man roster decisions. Cough, cough, Chris Sale, cough, cough, Jaron Duran at some point. So I think that they just kind of took the easy route. I mean, I'm not a fan of it, but I think that's what they were going for there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was definitely surprised. My prediction was it was going to be Chris Herman, who, you know, they have these two guys, Herman and Jet Bandy, who are their sort of break glass in case of emergency catchers who, they don't have a ton of catcher depth, as I'm sure you guys have highlighted on this show. Quite a bit, and Connor Wong was not exactly knocking down the door. As Keaton and I discussed on our pod on Monday, he has a 10 WRC plus at AAA, so that he is mightily struggling. I know that they think a lot of him from an athletic standpoint and still like him for the future, but you know, it was a little bit shocking. So I think you're absolutely right that it was just a 40-man thing. And Cora was vocal about using him in the exact same way that they're going to use Plawecki, so it looks like he will actually draw a start. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how he handles the major league staff.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to see him whenever he makes his first start, because that definitely will be really interesting to watch and huge for him. Like, I couldn't even imagine, you know, catching like some like major league talent.
Yeah, pretty cool. He also got into his first game as a pinch runner, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
So already making a little bit of an impact here. So good for you, Connor Wong. Should we start referring to the Mookie Betts trade as the Connor Wong trade?
Yeah, I think so, totally.
Okay, good. let's talk about the draft here a little bit. Jack Leiter, who I think we all want, or no. Shelley, your favorite person for this pick is Davis?
Yeah. I'm the odd one who doesn't want one of the Vandy guys.
Okay. Well, the guy who you don't like or don't want struck out 15 batters in a 1-0 loss to NC State in the College World Series. Are you sticking to your guns on wanting the slugging catcher over the pitcher who is really good?
Yes, yes, I still am. As much as I would love to have Jack Leiter, and even if we do happen to land Jack Leiter, Kumar Rocker, even one of the prep shortstops, which I definitely do not think is going to get to us at the number four pick, I like Davis. I've been burned with how the Red Sox have not been able to develop pitching kind of sort of recently, especially like with these high draft picks. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I know that with this game, like, he struck out 15 batters, but he still threw 120 pitches in that outing. And it just seems that Vandy is, like, really just going for it, which I totally understand. But just having Jack Leiter, who is kind of on the smaller side, I think he's, like, 6 foot, right? Throwing 120 pitches in a game, like, that's not good. It just scares me a bit. And I just think Davis is, like, super uber safe. You know that bat is going to produce, whether it is a catcher. I mean, I think that he's probably going to move off of catcher, maybe to, like, third base or something. But that bat is so safe. And just the pitching and the lack of pitching development that I have seen kind of recently in the Red Sox just has me scared a bit.
Yeah, those are fair points. I think, you know, while Davis does look safe, there is historically a little bit of an issue with right-handed power-hitting college bats translating well to the major leagues. So that's one thing that worries me a little bit about Davis. I had a follow-up, though, to your thoughts on later. If it were a different organization, let's just say it was like Miami or something like that, choosing between Leiter and Davis, given, like, you know, I'll also just use Miami as an example, because I think they're, like, pretty good at pitching development, but they're not like the Dodgers or the Braves. You know, they don't have a reputation for being incredible at it. If it were a neutral party, would you feel differently about this?
Yeah, I think that I actually would. I've just been so jaded with the Red Sox development that I would have a little bit, you know, just I would feel better if he was going to Miami or somewhere else. It's just, yeah, I just think that I'm jaded at this point. I'm just like, yeah, we can have pitching prospects. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder too, though, if it will be any different if the Red Sox get a hold of him, that he is so much more advanced than somebody who they had, like Trey Ball or Jake Roehm or whoever, who was coming out of high school. Yep. Jack Leiter, as a finished college product from one of the top college programs in the country, it feels a little bit more like getting Eduardo Rodriguez after being in high A than it does, you know, getting one of those super raw guys. So maybe having to spend less time in the system could benefit the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's a totally fair point.
But it is going to be interesting. I'm personally still rooting for the Leiter thing. I think that Red Sox pitching development has definitely changed over the last few years too. And with Chaim Bloom in charge now, I wonder how that will affect things. Tampa certainly has no issues developing starting pitchers, so maybe a little bit of that will trickle down to Boston through Chaim Bloom. I'm looking forward to that if it can. All right, let's get to Worcester. We have a lot to talk about at AAA Worcester. First of all, Franchi Cordero, who immediately went down there and looked like the best hitter in the world, has cooled down the past week and is only hitting .222 with 7 strikeouts. My question to you, Shelley, is who makes their way to Fenway first between Cordero, Jern Duran, and Marcus Wilson? Wilson is also on the 40-man and has been hitting very well lately, including a pretty impressive line last week, which I'll let you talk about.
Yeah. When I was just kind of like doing some research for this pre-pro here, I was really surprised with kind of how well Marcus Wilson is doing at AAA. I mean, it's the highest level that he's, you know, ever hit at. He's hitting in the past week 316 with a 462 OBP. He's, you know, stolen two bases. He's hitting, you know, pretty high up in the Blue Sox kind of lineup there. And he is on the 40-man, and he is performing better than Cordero. But I think that Cordero makes his you know, way to Fenway before any of the other guys. And as much as I like what I'm seeing from Wilson so far this year, I think that he is trade bait at this point, because I think that the Red Sox really, I mean, they traded Benintendi, right, to get Cordero, right? And Jiren Duran is absolutely killing it. And there's really just no room for Marcus Wilson, which makes me sad because he's hitting well. So I'm thinking that he might be an interesting trade piece, you know, sometime this summer.
No, he's been DHing kind of a lot, hasn't he?
Oh, yes? Okay.
I'm wondering.
I don't know. I've just been looking at just basic box scores where it doesn't have the position, so...
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I feel like I've seen some Worcester lineups where Marcus Wilson has been in the DH spot, so we'll have to look into that a little bit more. But, you know, I do agree that he could end up being trade bait, especially with the logjam that they have going on here. And they have just so many 40-man decisions to make in this upcoming offseason. So if somebody's willing to pay for him, and I don't believe he was a Bloom acquisition. I believe he was a acquisition under Dombrowski, right?
Yep, he was.
Yeah, so that's also something to think about. I would be really sad if Duran is not the name out of these three. And I agree. Banging the drum over the last week for him to come up, and I still don't get it. We're all kind of on the edge of our seat with the Jaron Duran watch at this point, but I don't know. Apparently, they're just not in a rush. I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been really great to see like Wanda Franco and Jaron Duran just be called up at the same time and make their debut at the same time, and just have, you know, just some AL East kind of back and forth stuff there.
Yeah, it would have been really cool. I do get though, and I was advocating for it to happen, so, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but I do get the idea that like Jaron Duran might have been billed as like their response to Wander Franco, which is just not fair to Jaron Duran, because Wander Franco is like a once in a generation type prospect, so it's kind of, yeah, I don't know if he wants that smoke.
Yeah.
All right, some other news from Worcester. Tanner Houck returned. He threw 3 innings, struck out 6 while walking 1. 3 2/3, 6 Ks, 0 walks, 3 hits and 2 earned runs in the game today. When do you think he makes his way back to Fenway, especially considering the struggles that we've seen from no-goo Garrett Richards and no-goo Martin Perez? Are either of those guys getting replaced anytime soon?
I think so. I mean, I did like to see that, you know, in the game today, he went, Tanner Houck went a little bit further, got his pitch count a little bit, you know, higher. You know, he's still working back from, I think it was an arm injury. So he's starting to come back, starting to be, you know, built back up. So I think that we see him soon. I think that Garrett Richards' spot is a little bit more in flux than Perez, just based on, I just don't think Martin Perez could really, is not really like the reliever type. Like, I don't think that his stuff can like really quote unquote play up in the bullpen. That's really not his type, you know, that's not who he is. So I do think that Garrett Richards might shift to the bullpen if he continues to struggle. And I do think that Tanner Houck, hopefully, you know, within the next couple of weeks, we'll take his spot.
You know, I wonder if Garrett Richards gets put in the pen, how much he will pout in that role. I know that he was demoted to the pen with the Padres last year, but he just seems like a guy who wouldn't be super happy in that role.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because, I mean, if you just, like, watch, like, after his starts and when he's talking, like, with, you know, the media and reporters and stuff like that. He doesn't really seem like a really nice fellow at times. Like, I could see where he could be a little rough around the feathers, you know, just, yeah. So I hope that he doesn't pout.
Yeah. I wonder if they would, you know, maybe try and solve this situation with a trade of one of these guys rather than transitioning one of them to the pen for chemistry purposes.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly something you have to consider on a team with playoff and championship aspirations like the Red Sox find themselves with this year, is not upsetting that balance of team chemistry and being realistic with what guys can do. Certainly a new environment, and you know, Richards is the last start that he made, and we'll see what his spin rates look tonight, but his last start, his spin rates were way down, and he didn't throw a single curveball, so that is definitely telling. A guy who, as Eck has called the spin doctor, you know, he just he relies on that to be effective. So I wonder, and the way he was talking about it too, you know, being like, oh, I'm happy that I got to this point in my career before this started happening, like, made me feel like he's a guy who has really no intention of trying to pitch without it. So yeah. I don't understand. Like, I'm just so happy they hold a team option on both Richards and Perez for next year. I don't expect either of them to be back.
Yep, I totally agree.
All right. Well, Kyle Hart is, as you put it, doing some things. In his past two starts, he's thrown 14 innings, struck out 9, and has a 1.29 ERA and a 1.00 WHIP. Is Kyle Hart actually good?
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him making like a spot start or something. I really felt bad for him last year, because when he made his debut last year, it wasn't great, and he was like dealing with injuries, right? So I just
think he had COVID too, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, I just want him to come back and maybe like make a spot start or two, and, you know, just kind of show that he is a pretty okay pitcher. Right? Because I just don't think that what he showed last year was really his talent. So, I don't know. I have a soft spot for him. I just, like, want him to come up and just do okay. So, you know, he could talk about that with, like, his grandkids or something.
Yeah, I don't care about his discussions with his grandkids. I'm a lot meaner than you. I got mega Ryan Weber vibes from Kyle Hart.
And
I'm sure he's better than that, okay? And I did have some expectations for him last year, but he just seems to me to be one of these guys that stuff just doesn't really translate to the big leagues. So
that's fair. Totally fair.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, Mr. Hart. I'm sure you're a nice fellow. Or maybe you're not, and I'm not sorry at all. On to Portland. Brian Bello, someone who we both are very happy about, absolutely dominated in his second start at AA. He pitched 5 1/3 innings, struck out 10. This is a guy whose stuff will play at the big leagues. Walked just 1 and had 1 earned run allowed. How excited are you about Mr. Bello?
I am very excited. I mean, I know that we were talking about earlier in the pod that, you know, the Red Sox pitchy development kind of crew can't really, you know, develop anyone or whatever. I'm surprised that you didn't throw Bello in my face. because he has been absolutely just amazing this year. He's been, like, I look at like the projected starters each week, and I try to like time out his start so at least I could, you know, flip on MILB TV just to kind of see him just kind of, you know, just throwing the ball around. And I'm just really excited, and it's been a while since I've been excited this excited about a pitcher. I mean I like Thad Ward, but Thad Ward didn't have like this amount of like strikeouts and just totally dominating. So I'm really excited about Bello's season so far.
Yeah, and I think his stuff is even a tick better than somebody like Thad Ward, who I agree I was excited about. But, you know, he seems to be a legitimate contender to be in a major league rotation at some point, and maybe even take a step to being an important member of a rotation. He's certainly somebody you can dream on. And, you know, I think you're right. I should have probably thrown him at you a little bit with talking about Bloom's pitching development, because he's somebody who really has kind of blossomed over the last two seasons. So maybe they are doing some different things. Let's talk about our favorite prospect in the system, Tristan Casas. He has been struggling just a little bit in his last 15 games. He's hitting .220 with 13 punches in 41 plate appearances. It's a 31% strikeout rate. Shelley, this is part of his game, but are you concerned that this is kind of showing itself a little bit more than you expected?
No. I mean, I just kind of, like, put him on the pre-pro. Like, you know, maybe some of our listeners were just kind of looking at, like, box scores and be like, why is Tristan Casas not doing anything? It's okay. It's part of his game. He's going to have swing and miss, but he has a lot of power. This is his first time really at a, you know, a really high level, double A. So you're going to see this from him. What you kind of need to watch is how does he adjust to the pitching. Like, does he, you know, is his batted ball profile kind of changing a little bit? Or once we start seeing the adjustment, that's when you know that, you know, Casas is back. So I just kind of wanted to point it out. Yeah, even our top guys can struggle a bit, but, you know, don't be too scared.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what I see from this is maybe a little mid-season fatigue. You know, he did play the USA Baseball stuff with Jaron Duran as well. And could just be the ebb and flow of a season as well. So something to monitor for sure. But the shine is definitely continuing to grow with Tristan Casas. He had a really nice little write-up in FanGraphs a couple days ago, maybe last week, saying that, you know, they think he's a 55 hit tool guy now as well. So that's pretty high praise for somebody with that type of power. Definitely nice. Moving down to High A Greenville, Chris Murphy, maybe my favorite pitching prospect outside of Brian Baio in this system, has pitched well in June. In three starts, he has 16 innings pitched, 15 strikeouts and just two walks, which is the lovely part of Chris Murphy's game and one of the evolutions since he's come to the Sox. In the game today, he went 5 2/3 with 6 strikeouts, 0 walks, just 3 hits allowed, and 1 earned run. Are you impressed with Chris Murphy's continued development?
Yeah, and I'm really glad to hear that you're a Chris Murphy stan as well. I mean, I've been a fan of his, like, since he was drafted, and he showed, like, a lot of improvement with his control in 2019, like a really, really short stint. I mean, and then at the beginning of this year, we started to see those walks kind of come back, and I'm like, well, maybe that was just a short sample size back in 2019. But his last couple starts, he's not walking guys, he's striking out guys, he's limiting hits. I'm like, yeah, this is the Chris Murphy that we saw after he was drafted, and I'm getting right back on the Chris Murphy train. I'm so excited.
Yeah, he was a guy I got a couple looks at in person before COVID hit at Lowell. And I was just super impressed because, you know, the scouting report that we got on Chris Murphy when he was drafted versus what I ended up seeing on the field was quite different. So, you know, definitely credit the minor league coaches of the Red Sox and the Red Sox excellent pitching development for getting Chris Murphy where he is today.
Yep.
Right, Shelley?
Yep. I'm not going to say anything. I'll just say yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. More importantly, they'll have to deliver him nicely to Fenway before Shelley will change her mind about pitching development for the Red Sox, which is very fair. Down to the lowest level of the minors that is not the GCL or the DSL, Salem. High A Salem. We're low A Salem now. Jeez, I'm going to do that 1,000 times
100%.
Before I get it right. Eduardo Lopez, international signee for the Red Sox from, what, 2019? Yeah, that was 2019, right?
18, actually.
18. Wow. Time flies. Eduardo Lopez was a surprising add to the Salem roster in his first taste of professional baseball since his DSL stint in 2019. So he is going to be down there. And Gilberto Jimenez, one of the top five prospects in the Red Sox system, usually top four depending on who you talk to, is hitting .345 against right-handed pitchers and .175 versus left-handed pitchers. Let's talk about Eduardo Lopez first here. What do you expect from young Eduardo, a guy who we really haven't seen too much about? We just kind of have read scouting reports. I mean, have you had a chance to tune into any of his games at all? I don't even know if they have Salem on MLB TV.
They have Salem very sporadically. It really, definitely with that lower level there, you kind of, it's kind of hit and miss. So I haven't been able to catch a game. But I was just like really excited to just see like a new name on the roster, right? As someone that we've been kind of like, you know, back in 2019, it's like, oh yeah, this guy, you know, he could be kind of something. So, again, I think he's played in maybe two games so far. It's okay, right? But it's like, this is like his highest level ever. So I don't really know what to expect, especially at the beginning, because it's such a huge jump.
Yeah.
So I'm just really just excited just to have him like on the Salem roster. So hopefully at some point I can actually see him on MILB TV.
Yeah, I'm really excited about him, too, you know, for fantasy baseball, which Shelley and I both do, and we contribute to a bunch of stuff with that. He's somebody who I've rostered in a couple really deep leagues, too, because of the write-ups from people like Ben Badler of Baseball America. He has a very interesting, sort of well-rounded profile. He's not somebody that has tools that sort of pop off the board, but he makes a lot of contact, and he has a pretty mature approach. So I am looking forward to how he handles high A, and it kind of shows you what the organization thinks of him, too. And that's one of the things that prospect writers who I trust tend to point out a lot is trust what the team thinks of the player by where they're putting him. So this is a pretty aggressive assignment for a guy that's his age. So I like it. I'm excited for Eduardo.
Mm-hmm.
Jimenez. This is a guy who we think a lot of, but when I saw him at Lowell, the swing from the right side and from the left side could not be much more different. He's very, very slappy from, I think it's the left side, and he has much more of a traditional approach from the right side. Or do I have those reversed? I can't remember.
I think you have it correct.
Okay, but the point here being switch hitting's hard, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Gilberto Jimenez, his swing looks so much better from one side than it does the other, and the splits are kind of showing that right now, I mean, is it time to just have him switch and focus on one thing? Work pretty well for Cedric Mullins, right?
Yeah, it worked really well for Mullins, and I when I was just kind of like going through like stats and just seeing like this stark difference between right-handed pitching and left-handed pitching and knowing that he's a switch hitter and just knowing how difficult that must be, and I've heard you say that his swing is it's totally different for like both sides. I don't know why they are still kind of like letting him switch it. I just hope that someone gets in his ear that maybe you should just stick to the side that you hit better with. Focus on that. Become a much more complete hitter. Yeah, he's probably not going to show a lot of power. I mean, that's really not his game, per se. But just focus on one side. Get really good with that side. And then, you know, just go balls out in the outfield. Just catching, just be the great, you know, center fielder, and just focus on one side of the plate.
Yeah, I agree. Baseball's so hard in this modern day with, you know, the crazy spin rates and velocities that pitchers have. I think switch hitting is generally overrated, but I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority there. What do you think about switch hitting in general?
I'm not the biggest fan. I mean, there are very few people who can actually do it well, and usually it doesn't go well. So I agree with you. I think that it is overrated.
Yeah, I'm the guy who I think of when I think of switch hitting actually being effective is Jason Veritek, but you know, he's like a once in a blue moon talent.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, that concludes today's show. Do we have any listener questions or anything to go through?
Nope. No questions.
Okay. Well, if you do have any questions for this podcast, you know, chime into us on the Over the Monster Twitter account. We're always willing to answer your minor league questions as well. You can check out Bob Osgood at the Dynasty Guru as well. You can check out Shelly at the Dynasty Guru or at Over the Monster. And you can find Bob on Twitter at BobOsgood15. You can find Shelly at ShellyV_643. You can find me at DevJake. Thanks for joining us for today's show. Thank you, Shelly, and we'll be back with you next week.